welcome to Bagel Tech Noise, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we listen to Ian's son, who's just got his CBT license, drive his bike around in his bedroom directly above him. We hope you enjoy it. If there's any background noise, then it's us, and it's Ian, and it's his son, so don't worry, it'll be fine. We're here to discuss the week in technology, what a week it's been. If you're on BlackBerry, you won't know anyway, what's the point? Joining me, a fantastic panel, a bit of a switch around this week. Top left, Mr. Ian Grant from Noisy York. How's it going, pal?
Oh, I'm all right, mate, thank you.
Jolly good.
All well.
Good week at work for you then, I would have thought, with enterprise solutions being a little bit less enterprise and a lot less solution.
It's not been too bad, actually. We've had one, maybe two calls, people complaining about the BlackBerry's not working, so not been as bad as I expected. And I know what another part of our business that uses the Biz service had a lot more problems than us, but we've got Biz service, so we've had less.
So clearly the term worldwide outage doesn't cover York.
Well, it doesn't cover Yorkshire, no. Clearly not. It's been going up and down like the proverbial, but not as anywhere near as bad as you'd expect.
Proving once and for all that Yorkshire is God's country.
Oh, absolutely. We're safe up here.
Next in, we've got Mr. Barry Collins from PC Pro Magazine. How's it going, mate?
It's going very well, you and yourself.
Yes, thank you very much for my little my expose on last month's episode. I had a good look through it. It was very kind. You put a lot more of that interview in than I thought. I thought I'll say a load of crap and they'll put in three lines and that'll be it. But you wrote down all the slanderous stuff that I came out with.
Did I? I have to send to my importer.
No, I wasn't too bad, I don't think. Well restrained. good couple of weeks. We haven't seen you for a month or so.
Yeah, I've been really busy. Last time I think I spoke to you, I was just heading out to LA to see Windows 8. So
was that worth the trip, dude?
Yeah, it was actually. It was,
oh, really?
You know, it was a good good show and lots to see there. There's a whole world of stuff in Windows 8 that we haven't even had a chance to touch on yet. So hopefully, when the betas roll out and we can see a bit more of the features that are going on behind the scenes, things are going to get more interesting.
Well, they have made a change, haven't they, today, to the way some of the layout is based on some customer feedback. So
they haven't had a chance today. They've been too busy trying to uninstall iOS 5 and God knows what.
Uninstall it?
Install and then rehash and restore, and about 5 hours later get the Office iPad back into something like working order.
Oh dear, never mind. Beneath Barry, we've got Sarah. How are you doing, girl?
I'm very well, thank you.
No such iOS problems for you, eh?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Absolutely, an iOS free zone. Well, except the iPad, but I'm not going to go anywhere near iOS 5 on that for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no Windows 8. OS 10, no Lion. You're in Linux heaven, missus.
You are, yeah. I know, apart from the sad news today, but.
Yes.
Other than that, yes, it's no interruptions at all.
And last but by no means least, squished Eric Lanigan, apparently.
I'm squished again. Uh-oh.
You're squished again. I need to figure this one out. But how are you been, pal?
A little bit squished, but besides that, just fine.
I have no idea what's going on. We're doing the close-up shot of you tonight, then.
I'm in 3x4 aspect ratio.
You're okay on the other one, but not that one. The week in technology. It's been a fun week. We've had a whole load of stuff happen. The Digital Economy Act here in the UK has had to go into the House of Lords. BT and TalkTalk have decided that they're going to appeal against it, and they've been given leave to appeal to the House of Lords. And those are the fine fellows that are going to check that they're okay. The Google Prime thing, Nexus Prime thing, Samsung types thing, has had a bit of a shift around. First it was the 12th, then it was the 19th, then it was the 26th, and now it's back to the 19th apparently. But that's only for this week. Maybe it'll change again next week. Maybe on the 19th it'll change to the 26th. Sony are recalling 1.6 million Bravia TVs. There's a good chance you bought one of these. I did. And apparently it can burn your house down. So do take care and have a look for the recall numbers. And the London Philharmonic is going to do a lot of game classics. Yes, Super Mario Brothers is in there, Angry Birds is in there, Metal Gear Solid, Fallout 3, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. It's coming out on an album. It does say on the link, you can click it and you can actually hear some of the stuff that's going on, but it doesn't work, so sorry.
Now, wait a minute. I get Super Mario. That's like one song, and everyone knows the one song. What is the sound of Angry Birds and Modern Warfare 3?
Well, Angry. Well, Angry.
It's that, isn't it?
No, it's nothing. Like, it's nothing like that, Sarah.
That was a generation game, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Angry Birds is, if you go to YouTube, type in Pomplemoose and look at their version of Angry Birds, and that's far better. But there is a tune for Angry Birds. There is a theme tune that plays in the background, and it's kind of like what Sarah sang, but not. There we go.
I'll check it out.
And that's an album. That's a must-have album right there. I have to say, actually, I think the best thing about that album is the burning cello, because it looks like Call of Duty, doesn't it? With, you know,
it does.
It's
it does.
Brilliant.
It looks awesome.
It's perfect. And on the game front as well, Grand Theft Auto 3 is hitting 10 years, and it's being released on the iOS platform. And you can buy this doll, this figurine, action figure. Is the original Grand Theft Auto dude. And
God, how many guns are there?
There's a whole pile of guns there, yes.
Looks eerie. I've never seen an action figure that stood like a real human like that. It looks like a little tiny person.
It does kind
Did you
of.
Never see Action Man?
What?
Did you never see
scary looking, isn't it?
Well, usually action figures just kind of stand with like a generic like stance, but he's got attitude.
Well, action figures generally, I mean, Action Man never looked like a real person at all. I mean, he was genuinely plastic. Well, the reason that this guy looks like he stands correctly and probably does is that's $150.
You're kidding.
That's the difference.
No,
it's not $12.
No,
that's branding for you.
That ain't your grandfather's G.I. Joe.
Yeah, that is $150 apparently of action figure.
Jesus.
In which case, I think the guns better work.
Complete with orange prison jumpsuit.
Yes, that's when you get caught.
I was going to say, that's when he ends up in the slammer, isn't it?
Yeah. And last but by no means least, Sonim released a whole load of rugged cell phones. There you go. And they're sexy, aren't they? Apparently, the slogan is you can drive your car over them. Or maybe actually that's what they want you to do. I'm not sure, because I'd tempt me that I'd drive over it. But the other thing that seems to be a trend this week for rugged cell phones, Kyocera released one, but okay. I've got to say I want this one, because this one is a Star Trek communicator.
Oh yes,
I want one.
It's like a Motorola Razr, isn't it?
No, it's not. A Motorola Razr look nothing like a Star Trek communicator. That looks like a Star Trek communicator.
Bow to your greater judgment on that. I don't watch Star Trek.
Gold, didn't they?
It's the gold. It's the little grill thing on the top. It's the fact it's the little crappy lettering. I mean, that thing is, you know, in terms of smartphone, that's got an IQ of 5. But I don't care.
Do you think they have to license it, or do you think they'll get sued?
I don't know.
I was going to say, do you think it's actually been built supposed to look like the communicators in Star Trek?
Well, maybe it kind of is, but if you look at the kind of chunkiness next to that bloke's hand, either that bloke has got an incredibly small hand, or that's a really big flip phone. That's huge. But I want one. I don't care. It won't work over here. It's only on Sprint, but I still want one. Send me one. If you're in the States, send me one of those, and I'll send you $50 or whatever it costs.
That's not really
sure
large,
Say again, Barry?
I was going to say, you sure that's not the new Nokia Windows Phone 7 handset?
You think?
Yeah, that's where they're going with it.
That's the new decal.
Yeah. There's got to be somewhere a factory in China that just cranks out every day hundreds of thousands of exact replica Star Trek communicators, perfectly SIM card ready, and to sell on a blanket on the side of the street for $5.
There you go, chat room. That is your mission this evening. Should you choose to accept it, please find us a link for a 3G ready Star Trek communicator from China. That will work.
You can get one of those on Alibaba, no problem.
When we were looking at the tough phones just now, what was going through my mind was thinking, are they building them like that so that when they keep dropping calls and you throw it across the room, at least it'll survive?
Well, yeah, it could be. But they'll probably take a good call, because the whole thing's probably an antenna. There we go. RIM. We can't not talk about RIM. We can't not start with RIM, I would have said, because surely, unless I've got it wrong, this is the biggest story of the week. Now, from everyone I've seen that owns a BlackBerry this week, and I've seen probably about 24 people who are on BlackBerry, they've all suffered. They can get texts, they can receive emails, some of them, but they can't send any emails. Anyone else affected pretty badly with it, or has it been kind of passed you by?
It's passed. As I said, we've got three bed servers for our business, and we haven't had. I can see from the logs that the things have been going up and down like the proverbial, as I said earlier, but it really hasn't been a problem for us. We've had one, maybe two people call us to say they've having issues with their phones, and we just said, oh, it's this BlackBerry thing, so fine. And they've sort of decided not to whinge like the rest of the internet's doing and got back on with doing some work. So it's been fine, really, for us. I know the people on the other side of us that use the Biz service have had a little bit more outages, but with Bez, it isn't as affected. The Biz service, which is BlackBerry Internet service, is the one that's been more affected than the BlackBerry Enterprise service, because you actually host part of the hardware yourself.
So that's the key issue, then. It's where the hardware's hosted.
Yeah, because when you've got Bez, you have your own server that does the turn of the email into the file that gets sent to the phone, and then your file gets passed through RIM servers for the encryption, all the other nonsense, where the email and everything else is, and the conversion is all hosted on their servers when you have the Biz, B-I-S, BlackBerry Internet service. There's the difference. And I think that's the one that's had more problems than the Bez, which is where you've got your own box and your own server.
Ian, what is the BlackBerry Internet service? Because when I was reading these articles, a couple of them said that, I mean, BBM was down. That makes sense.
Yeah,
email was down. That makes sense, because I know that goes through their servers too. Why were they saying web browsing was down?
When you connect to them, all your data goes through them. It acts like a proxy. So even surfing from the phone.
So that's interesting, because when Amazon did their Silk announcement, I never heard anyone compare it to BlackBerry. Do they do an optimized, cached, and recompressed web?
No, there's nothing like that. It's simply passed through. So effectively, it's passed through into our network. So if one of our users surfs on their handset, they still get the same restrictions that apply if they were on the network. So our content filtering still applies, so they still can only go to sites within
It goes through your LAN, or it goes through BlackBerry's central service?
It goes through BlackBerry central service, and it's passed on to, as I understand it, passed on to our LAN, and then in turn goes off to the internet. So they still have our rules applied to their surfing habits if they use the phone. So if you try and go to the sports site, you're still blocked. You still can't go betting.
Even if they're outside of work?
Even if they're outside of work.
I had no idea. Now, wouldn't that make the latency just insane, though, if it has to go, you know, up to the cert BlackBerry, then to you, then back to the phone? I mean, how is it even, it seems like the antithesis of what Silk is trying to do.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be a problem for the people who use it. I've had handsets over the years, and thankfully I haven't got one at the moment, but it's not a bad service. No one seems to complain. Everyone thinks it's great.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, everything goes through their services, so that's why web surfing will be down. But you can still text and make phone calls, which is after half the point of the thing.
Are you still there, Eric?
I'm still here. I don't know why. Oh, my wire cast is just totally...
What a show! What a show! Corrections on the fly. That's what we need. We're there. We're back. We're okay.
Of a question mark.
Will you ask all the good questions, mate?
Oh, now I'm back.
Now you're back, yeah. So so this is really only private users that have been let down particularly. You're saying the enterprise area is fairly untouched. Is that your experience as well, Barry? Have you had calls and emails coming in telling you otherwise?
It's been quite hard to gauge, but I think largely across the board on BBM and the email service, people have been experiencing problems. It's sort of hard to tell because we're very small business focused, so a lot of our readers are SMBs, probably not running their own enterprise server. But there's certainly been a lot of upset and disquiet amongst the PC Pro faithful.
Sarah, has your workplace got BlackBerry as an option, or are you different phones?
Including iPads and iPhones as well, I mean, I think there's a few, but I've actually not been aware of any particular issues, so I can't really comment on it. The only observation I had was I had a chat with one of my colleagues about it 2 days ago when it first started to occur, and she was telling me about how it all works, because I didn't really understand that you actually have to buy the BlackBerry internet services after you've got the phone, which I was quite surprised at. And I was, you know, everything going through this thing, and all I could think of was, well, if you create a single point of failure, there's always going to be a risk of something like this happening.
I mean, what's interesting as well is that, that BlackBerry have no indication as to what caused this or what the basic error was. They're talking about working through with their hardware partners to try and discover what it was. But at the moment, they've got absolutely no idea what the outage was. And when they were asked on Monday how long the outage was going to last, they gave the plumbers suck, you know, of no idea. Absolutely no idea.
That's really not good, is it?
I mean, Mike,
you
Mike Laz-
saying that it was a switch.
Yeah. Switches that went.
They're saying the dual redundant, I'm quoting here, obviously, I haven't memorized this. The dual redundant high capacity core switch designed to protect the infrastructure caused the outage, and it gave messaging delays, user hardware, and from multiple vendors was involved. It seems that the hardware failure is to blame, and really is still trying to understand why the system failed and declined to offer vendors any further information. I mean, Mike Lazaridis did a press conference, and he said services are back up globally. He wanted to point out that there was a 99.97% uptime for BlackBerry over the last 18 months, so focus on the positive. But then he was asked about why some people were still getting problems with message blocking, and he suggested that they take their battery out and put it back in again.
That's the best way to fix a BlackBerry if it goes wrong.
High level,
reboot it.
High level technical support.
Just like Windows.
Very, very good.
Their response to this was hilarious because for 2 days they basically said nothing. They just stuck their fingers in their ears, and their Twitter account was just gone absolutely deathly quiet. Nobody said a word. And then for the last 24 hours, they've been in sort of apology overkill. They've had video messages from the CEO, all these great statements and press conferences. It reminds me, and I know it's completely inappropriate, but it reminds me of like the Queen with Diana, when she said nothing for days and then suddenly you couldn't get rid of her. It's been like that.
No, I get that analogy. That's fine. You expect better from us, and I expect better for us. We've let so many of you down, says Lazaridis in his video. And that was before they'd fixed it as well. So, I mean, Eric, did you do a Monday night tech talk back?
Monday, no.
You didn't. Have you done one at all this week?
No, a long story. The last three I didn't get to do.
No, it's okay, because I was wondering what the calls might have been for this to
for the BlackBerry.
Yeah.
No, but I'll tell you what has me interested is how, I mean, I don't see how RIM has a chance anymore. I mean, I think once someone else comes along to give feature parity to the things that I was just asking Ian about, you know, like really clearly there's some enterprise level stuff that businesses like, because apparently only RIM allows them to do that, because I've never heard anyone else doing that. So as soon as someone is able to provide equivalent features, I think then RIM has nothing anymore. They have the worst hardware. All they have now are physical keyboards that people are used to. They're locked in because they're used to using the BlackBerry tools. They don't want to have to learn a new system. Beyond that, they've got no benefit anymore. It's the worst hardware. It's the low end of the hardware. And now with iMessage, the BlackBerry Messenger is now no longer a big feature.
They still have one big thing. Business likes the BlackBerry because it's encrypted. It's one of the few devices that the encryption keys aren't out in the wild except for government.
Or Saudi Arabian government, most particularly.
Yes, it's practically it's uncrackable, essentially, to Joe public. It's a very, very secure system. These days, I mean, particularly in my industry, I work in the insurance industry, we need every bit of our hardware, our laptops, our phones need to be encrypted. So if they get lost in the wrong hands, customer data isn't breached.
But is that enough?
Not if Microsoft and Nokia get it right. This is the one big chance for Nokia and Microsoft now. They can crack the business market and take away RIM's lunch, then that will be fine for those two. And they can let Apple and Google take the consumer market just fine. I mean, Microsoft, you know, with the integration to Exchange and whatever, it's perfect. It's laid up for them. If they can get that side of the business right, then I think RIM could be in terrible trouble.
No, I mean, I was just going to say that part of the problem here is the timing, because they've had issues with phones. They've had a move towards touch phones in the last couple of years that's really been horrific. So their smartphone is relatively dumb, as Eric says. You've also got the problem of the fact that the playbook is on its backside at the moment. There's nothing else going to go with it. I mean, the timing couldn't be worse for RIM here. This is really, really bad in terms of the, you know, what's happened in the last 12 months. The Saudi Arabian government issue about data protection and so on, that really has meant that... I don't know if they'll ever recover from this. No?
I suspect not.
You think this is the end of RIM?
I can't see it. It's still so popular in business. I just can't see them suddenly wholesale saying, "Oh, no, we're not going to bother. We'll do Windows Phone and we'll hook it up to Exchange and we'll have Androids." Nothing else is. I've been looking recently at Android handsets and iPhones, and nothing is as secure as BlackBerry.
I don't think they have a future, but I think it could end one of two ways. I think one is if Apple, Google, or Microsoft come out with a system of encryption, or you know whatever businesses still think they're missing that only BlackBerry provides. Honestly, I'm not sure why they have taken this long to do that. Why Microsoft, Google, and Apple have just not tried to just knock off those last couple of bullet points off the feature list compared to BlackBerry. I really don't understand that. But the other way it could happen is if Apple and Google and they just continue to kill BlackBerry from the consumer side, just continue to make the business side a niche market smaller and smaller, and to the point where it's almost non-existent. But I think it's going to happen. And I think this iMessage thing that Apple has done is not only going to hurt BlackBerry, but also when I have a statistic I want to read you whenever you're ready for just amazing thing about text messages.
Go ahead.
All right, so text messages, according to the New York Times, get about a 4,000% markup. This is a PhD cell phone researcher that they talked to. Let's see, because apparently, and I heard this rumored various places before, but I never had a good source I could point to, like the New York Times here. But he says that the cost texting SMS texting, at least I think he's just saying in the United States, $20 billion in revenue. So $20 billion. Business, $7 billion to Verizon just by themselves. When they send a text, 20 cents. When you receive a text, 20 cents. That's 40 cents for a little message, which equates to $1,500 a megabyte. And by comparison, the same the cost of that traffic would over a 2 gigabyte data plan would be about 1.25 cents, not $1,500 per megabyte. So it's it cost them about a third of a penny to send text messages, is what this researcher estimates, because it's done over a spare capacity in the voice control channel. So it's not even a digital thing. It's not, or it probably is now, but it was just a piggyback on the voice network. So $20 billion industry of pure profit. You know, AT&T over here recently just made it so that you had to buy. They killed their $10 plan. Texting went from either 20 cents per send and per receive of messages, or $20 a month is the cheapest unlimited plan. Or like 500 messages or something. So now Apple, all of a sudden, iOS 5 comes out. Now, all of a sudden, every message by default, seamlessly in the background without any user intervention or even knowledge, is bypassing the SMS system, going over the internet, going through Apple's servers. They're encrypted. It's guaranteed delivery. You get you can request a send receipt and a read receipt. You can send multimedia way faster. It's more reliable and completely bypasses the carrier's SMS system. This is really going to disrupt things.
So, I mean, what the chat room here is, Carl in the chat room is just literally typed wow to those statistics that you've given out. The amount that they're creaming off the top from that would indicate a very profitable business. And if you look at the share price, this is the share price over the last 4 days from the whole incident associated with the loss of service. And it doesn't look like the stock market is that bothered about it, because actually in relative terms, you know, you're only talking about $24 a share. The real worrying trend is that one there, which is the last 6 months.
And this is who? This is RIM?
This is RIM. This is RIM share price in the last 6 months. You are talking about a share price now that is less than half of what it was 6 months ago.
Yeah. What happened to the rumors of Vodafone sniffing about? I mean, anything to win anymore?
Yeah, I was going to say, with all the talk of takeover, you would expect it to be much higher.
No. I mean, they're in the toilet as far as shares go. What was interesting, though, like I say, was that the stock market doesn't appear to have reacted that badly to what's gone on this week. I mean, their share price troughed this morning until 10 o'clock when they made the announcement. But then after that, it started to go back up, and it went back up to where it was for most of the week at $24-ish, $25-ish dollars. The long-term issue is clearly the bigger thing for them, and their quarters for the last two quarters have seen sharp drops, unquote, in productivity and profitability. Interesting. The end of RIM. Never mind, eh? Anyone ever owned a battery phone? I have.
Not me.
I typed well on it. I liked it. But there we go.
Use one for a business, of course. We've had hundreds of other things, but generally good handsets, generally good hardware.
Did everyone see the Asus Ultrabook?
You mean the MacBook Air clone?
Well, I think it's a bit harsh. I mean,
it's worse than harsh because it has a spinning hard drive.
Yeah, okay.
It's a MacBook Air with a 4200 RPM hard drive.
There's a new Intel form factor called the Ultrabook, though. They've brought them out just now. It's a whole brand of designs based around a new format, the same way the netbook is that Intel are promoting.
I mean, this
is just another one.
Is this a good looking machine, isn't it?
It is, and I'm joking, but I think there's actually a lot of merit to that. I think they did like a 24 or a 64 gigabyte, some smaller SSD, and then combined that. That's where the Windows installation goes, and then they combine that with your data and documents and everything, your apps on a second physical spinning hard drive. Which I'm surprised why is that not a common thing on the desktop? I mean, the cheapest Apple computer, the cheapest iMac you can get with that option of the OS installed separately is like $300 more. I don't see why this is not a more common thing.
SSDs are still so expensive, aren't they?
Say again?
SSDs are still so expensive, though, aren't they?
Well, I need to do a split thing. That's, you very rarely see that. Usually the companies either want to charge you, you know, hundreds of dollars for no hard drive, just an SSD, or they want to charge you for just a hard drive. And so I do commend Asus that they're trying to get it down to, I guess, a lower price point than the MacBook Air, while still providing some SSD performance for where it probably matters the most, which is your operating system.
Mm. Yeah, operating system and apps is exactly where you want. You want the boot disk essentially to be an SSD, and then you want your files stored on a conventional hard disk. That's the best value at the moment, because a big capacity SSDs are still hideously expensive. But I mean, we did a test last month. You can get 60 gigabyte SSDs now for about £70. So they're actually not that much more expensive. The only problem, of course, is either you've got to have some kind of hybrid disk, which is still very expensive, or you've got to fit two into a device like those Ultrabooks, and you just can't fit. There's no space physically in there for two 2.5-inch drives.
Is there a magic number on SSD for kind of, you know, this is the kind of minimum expectation for OS and apps, and then... you know, you could put 1 terabyte drive in the rest of it because it's only a 9.5 mil drive. But I mean, what's the magic number on an SSD? You know, what's the price break versus size break?
The 96 gigs for me seem to be about the right balance. You should be able to get Win7 or OS 10 in one of those.
Oh, did you say 96? I was going to say 64 because 64 was the, I think it's still the entry level MacBook Air.
Yeah, it might be all right for Apple. I'm not sure for Windows.
Barry, you've had a go with the MacBook Air. I mean,
yeah.
Did you get the feeling that 64 was enough on that?
I think 64 is tight. I mean, I've been running off a 64 gig laptop for the last 2 or 3 years, but it does fill up quite quickly, and you have to do a lot of uninstalling to keep things on an even keel, especially on Windows, because once you get into under 10% of the free space, Windows starts misbehaving because it can't use the spare hard disk space as a where they write the drive to memory. Yes, thank you very much. I've been up for about 12 hours.
It's all right, mate.
So I think 128 is probably the sweet spot actually for a SSD, and the prices aren't that bad at 128. When you start getting to 256 is when things start getting a little bit hefty in the wallet department.
So where do you think the space came from inside this Ultrabook? If they can somehow fit an SSD and a hard drive, what did they sacrifice? The battery?
I don't honestly know. I think that must be a hybrid drive, because you can get somewhere. It's got like a sliver of flash memory on top of a conventional hard disk. So I'm assuming that's what they've done. But to be honest, I've not had a very close look at that.
Please feel free to correct my ignorance, but isn't there a difference between a flash drive and a NAND flash?
Yeah.
Are the hybrid drives NAND flash?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And what's the difference in performance on those? Because from what I understand, they don't act well in very well as a hard drive for OS.
Is it the right
NAND? I'm quite happy to believe I'm talking out my arse because I do it regularly. But
I think that sounds right, because I think NAND is what they use in the iPhones.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a NAND flash drive in Dell 9 Mini. And I put 64 gig in that. It cost me about £70. And then I put OS 10 on it. And it wasn't brilliant at running OS-based functions. You know, the mail app and those kind of things never really were as slick as anything else. But I don't know if that's
I think... No, I think you're right. I think NAND has a slower read-write. I think it may also be less robust. I think you have fewer writes and reads before the sectors give out.
So, go on, sir.
I was just about to say. We did a test a couple of weeks ago on traditional flash drives, just using all of the laptops these days come with an SD card slot. So, can you actually just use a high capacity SD card as an extension to your hard disk, especially on devices like the MacBook Air, where you only get 64 gig at the base level? And actually, you can, as long the problem becomes they've only got a certain amount of write cycles. So you couldn't use them as a day-to-day hard disk because they would be the flash cards would be dead, within a month or two. But if you're only using it to store things like your music or your photo library, stuff that's not going to be accessed and edited every couple of minutes, then actually it's fine and the performance isn't that bad at all. So actually, even just a conventional SD card is not a bad way to expand the storage on things like the MacBook Air.
Didn't Toshiba do a computer whereby one of their laptops, you had a 2 gig SSD put in, and when you set it up, it would act for startup, or it would act for wake up, and it would store key files within the OS that it needed straight away rather than accessing the spinning media. So it allowed the thing to start up very quickly, but then it would go back to the spinning media for the minute-to-minute operations.
Yeah, it's what these hybrid drives do. But they've not really caught on. They're still very niche, and that's why they're still so expensive.
Was actually an SSD card that you physically put in the computer a separate slot. Yeah, it was an SD card that you put in a separate slot.
Right, okay.
It was on the side.
Hey, Barry, I've got a question for you. How come RAM has, like over the last 10 years, has the pace of price lowering, or you might say the pace of innovation for standard SD RAM is just, the new iPhone's still 512. A lot of computers, the new MacBook Air is still 2 gigabytes, the default. I mean, meanwhile, the hard drives and the CPUs have just, they've outpaced the cost and for what you get over the years dramatically. Do you know why that is with volatile RAM?
That's a good question. I guess, I know there's been a lot. People keep saying a hard disk is going to run out of capacity and it's going to plateau, and that's not happened. We've seen greater and greater densities on hard disk, which is why they can keep affording to up the capacity. I guess they're just not making the same kind of shrinks in the die for the RAM that they are in terms of density for the hard disks.
Because it seems weird to me, because we were just talking about the difference between NAND and the other kind, and it's like, well, yeah, so some is clearly faster. And it's like, well, how come RAM has just kind of like the pace of RAM prices have just slowed so much? You'd expect that by now we'd have some kind of system invented by someone where upon booting, you load like 64 gigabytes worth of, volatile. I guess that's what I'm getting at. You'd think that the kind of fast flash-based solid-state memory that dies when it loses power, you'd think that'd be cheaper than the stuff that doesn't lose it when it loses power. And yet that's not true at all. Flash memory, SSDs have just so outpaced solid state, regular RAM in terms of price.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's changed now. I think certainly the SSD, we're actually coming into sensible prices now. And I think we are going to see them pretty much become standard in laptops, especially over the next year or two. But it has been a gradual process. We've been saying that since about 2005, but actually it does appear to be happening. And the Ultrabooks especially, because to qualify for that Ultrabook certification, they have to boot within 20 seconds or something, I think it is. And Windows 8, in fact, if you look at the boot time to Windows 8, that they're really impressive. They're sort of sub 10, 15 seconds if you on an SSD. So I can see that being a big thing over the next year or two.
I mean, the point in the chat room is what Eric's describing what the Chromebook was attempting to do.
Not really. I think what I'm describing is more like what the old. I mean, I remember in school we had a System 6 or System 7 Mac that had a RAM disk that I don't know if someone knew what they were doing when they installed it. But I remember there we would store like some big programs on this RAM disk. Like you separate. You guys remember that? You'd separate RAM as if it were a part of your hard disk. Mm. Now I'm sure if you look at that the ratio of cost between hard drives and RAM. The balance of that must be different now because no one's done that for years. To say like I'm going to store a program permanently in this allocated bit of RAM. So that must have changed, I think, in terms of how fast RAM became cheaper.
A couple of people in the chat room have asked what's the magic size. Paul says he's got to have 128 gig would be his minimum. Carl, when he said does price count, I said no, what's the optimum amount, no money, no object, so he's put 500 gig as long as it's less than £200 unquote,
and 9 terabytes.
And Jack's written down that he's had problems with 64 gig on an HP netbook not being enough, so Jax is also too old to understand RAM. Bad luck. We're one for breaking news at the moment here on the Big Show. We've had a couple of things go off when we've gone into production. And here's the one of all. Steve Wozniak is queuing at the Los Gatos Apple store for an iPhone 4S. He's tweeted out that he's first in the line. So he's going to be there overnight tonight. If you want to meet the great man, get down to the Los Gatos Apple store and see if you can fight him for first place in the line.
But they're queuing to talk to him, not to get the iPhone 4S.
Well, he's an Apple employee, isn't he, still? So
I thought he had his own business. No, I didn't think he was affiliated with Apple officially anymore.
No, he still gets a check from Apple. He's listed as an Apple employee, and they interviewed him on something, can't remember what it was the other day, and he was saying that he was proud of the fact that he's the only person who's got a check from Apple that's unbroken, because of course Steve Jobs left, so his was broken, and now he's died, of course, but from day one of Apple Inc., Steve Wozniak has a paycheck. And he gets one every month. It's only $200 or something stupid. But
the question. Is he number one or number two?
Yeah, I don't know. That's right. Because, I mean, the Guy Kawasaki and Bob Cringely and all those guys had got, you know, 4, 5, and 6, weren't they?
Mm. Mm. Who was number one?
I don't know. We need to Google that. Apple employee number one.
The story that I remember hearing, and I don't know where this was that Wozniak, like the guy that they first hired to be the CEO, who then bailed quickly, assigned Wozniak employee number one, prompting Steve to get all angry and say, well, then I'm employee zero.
Right.
Sounds like Steve Jobs, yeah.
Definitely.
But I'm really surprised that Woz would be out. I did not expect he would... First of all, I would not have expected he would, you know, do an overnight line waiting for the iPhone 4S in any event. But to do this so close to Steve's death, I expected that he would refrain from doing those line meetups and those line waits for a while. And I'm really surprised not only that he would do it for this product, but that he would do it so soon.
I think it's a token. I mean, he could get an iPhone 4S just like that if he wanted to. I don't think he needs to queue up for it at all. It's probably some kind of sort of gesture or whatever that he's doing. And, you know, good on him for doing it.
I think Woz is Apple number one, Apple employee number one.
Yeah, I mean...
Things on the web are kind of saying that on the searches I've just done.
Yeah, no, I can't read the bloody names out. Carl in the chat room has he reckons he hears that too as well. Steve's one and other Steve wanted to be zero. So, well done. Any other stories this week that have struck anyone? Anything else that's worth a good old chin wag?
Sony's had problems again this week. Had another
Sony. Yeah, they've had another bust on the PlayStation Network, haven't they? Which isn't great for them. We should just touch on perhaps Dennis Ritchie dying. He was the guy that created the C program and was huge in the development of Unix. I mean, Sarah, he's probably someone that means an awful lot more to you than the rest of us. As Ian said before we started, it's kind of niche.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you think about even on the Mac these days, you know, OS X was based on Unix. So, you know, he effectively had a hand in creating that. and lots of other things as well. And, you know, how many applications and things are written based on the original C programming language.
Mm.
So, he's had a huge impact. And I was thinking about it earlier on, and I reckon that in the last, probably since about 85, a lot of what he did is probably responsible for helped me actually earn a living since about 85.
Right, okay. So
is that huge?
I was going to say, you like him then.
Well, yeah, of course I do, yeah.
Ian, anything to add?
Not really. I must admit, it was home this morning when I saw the news, to be fair. So I'll step to one side here, sorry.
Okay. Anyone else want to add anything? I mean, I've got to say, I didn't know who he was particularly until this afternoon, so...
No, I didn't know much. I can only echo what Sarah says, really. I think just what he does was underpin, you know, someone, it's been said today he had as much impact as Steve Jobs. And I think he did, in some senses, behind the scenes in that, you know, the underpinning of Unix, obviously for OS X now. And you know, he was just apparently a very, very nice guy as well, according to one of our writers who did a sort of little obit on him today. So he was a lovely fella to go meet as well. So, sad day.
Tone in the chat room, unsung hero and pioneer.
Definitely.
That'll do. Have you noticed the lack of rumours over the Nexus Prime? No?
There's rumours on the Android forums, if you go on there. There's everybody obsessing over who's going to make it, what it's going to be until now.
Is that just a case of like, it's different from iPhone because, you know, no one makes any rumours? Or is it just because I don't pay attention to Android because I don't have an Android phone?
Well, I would, but I haven't heard anything.
You've not heard any rumours?
No.
So I
mean, the fact that we're not talking about it probably says more about the fact that there isn't any rumours, isn't it?
I mean, is this an update worth waiting for? Because, I mean, I know it's only because they're releasing Chocolate Teapot at the same time, isn't it? So it's going to have... Is it going to have that on it, or is that tablet only anyway?
No, the new one, your Chocolate Teapot one's going to be the phone OS, and the Honeycomb's the one for tablets.
Right, okay. But are they not joining again together later on?
I thought Ice Cream Sandwich was the one when they joined, isn't it?
Oh, that's when they join. Chocolate Sandwich is joining.
Stop. Look, don't bring this Chocolate Sandwich and Chocolate Teapot thing. It's confusing enough without you.
Yeah, sorry, mate. Well, I did do a hashtag the other day on Twitter about OS names for Android, and there was some lemon curd and that kind of stuff came out. It was pretty good.
Talking of new OSs, there's a new version of Ubuntu out today as well.
Is there? Would that be
11.10?
Mm-hmm. Don't ask me
what it's called because it's got some really weird name. I'm not even going to try and pronounce that.
Rubber Gazelle.
What are they? They've had Lucid Lynx and Natty Narwhal and all those different.
The Maverick.
Yeah, like the Ocelot, wasn't there as well?
Ocelot.
Anyway, to answer your question, you went about Android. I think the reason that you don't see much buzz around any particular Android handset, and if you would see buzz around any handset, it'd be the one that Google made themselves, like this one. But I think in general you don't, because there are so many Android handsets that come out in a year compared to one iPhone. So it's like, how do you get people just even, you know, and they don't make them. They don't try to do a broad scatter shot for the public. You know, they have like six phones. You know, Samsung has six phones. HTC has like this whole line of phones, and one of them might hit you in the right spot. So they have it's the fragmentation that it's impossible for everyone to be consciously aware. It's impossible for advertising to inform everybody about every type of Android phone and build up buzz about every type of phone. Whereas with the iPhone, there's one a year.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, isn't it? I mean, I like the fact that there's a choice. I don't like some manufacturer telling me what phone I'm going to use.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just pointting out why there might be less consumer buzz about it, because it's a lot harder for consumers to know what to buzz about.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of the issues here as well, though, that the iPhone is an informed choice, maybe even desire, whereas an Android phone is an option that's presented in a showroom or in a phone store. And people buy it because they don't particularly know what they're buying. I mean, if you went out and polled in the high street, people that were carrying say, what phone have you got? Oh, I've got a Samsung Galaxy. Okay, fine. What OS is that running?
I think what Apple's been extremely successful about doing is creating some of the only products that people know and recommend by name. People wear Apple stickers. They wear Apple t-shirts. They love Apple, the brand, because it's a choice. They see it as a conscious choice. You're not born an Apple user, but that is a choice. So it's something that people, it's a decision they make. Whereas, there isn't really that around Samsung, HTC, Motorola. In those cases, it's pretty much it's like buying a PC. Why don't you see people with Dell t-shirts and HP stickers and everything? It's because they don't make just one product that is a choice about what, that you have to choose. Instead, they just kind of make, 100 different things, and it's like with the desktop PCs. Each manufacturer's product is so interchangeable with the ones next to it and with its other products. They're all commodity off the shelf. There's real, what is the brand name actually bringing to that product and that experience? As can you say, I love Samsung phones? You hear anyone actually saying that? It's very few people, because they haven't established a brand identity for their products. It's like a generic PC beige box. And I think that's the problem.
I mean, yeah. Samsung have got a reputation amongst those that know for looking nice as phones. But then when you're into the OS, everyone says, yeah, but I don't like the Android OS. And it's the OS that they slag off more than the phone's functionality, its performance, its processor. If they've bothered to look under the hood, they're actually quite impressed with the hardware itself. But it's the OS that lets it down.
Right.
Especially if it's been tainted by an airtime provider.
Yeah. So who doesn't want to update it?
Yeah.
So, well, that's the other way. They were bad. They were rubbish on, don't they?
Yeah. That's why I went out and bought a Nexus S.
I mean, Eric, your point there about emotional investment. This week, I have sustained the most abuse that I've ever had since I started up anything to do with BagelTech. And I really think that this week I could have gone round and pissed on people's lawns and had sex with their wives and got less of a vitriolic response than I got.
From Steve Jobs' comments?
Yeah. And I actually said he was great. God knows what happens if I said he was a tosser.
Well, it was a very measured greatness response that you had, but okay. It was a very well qualified great.
Yeah, no,
it was great, but
I think it's about keeping it in perspective, and that's what Ewan did.
Absolutely, I'd listened to last week's and spot on with your point of view on Jobs completely.
I got a tweet this week about, and I did point, I just bit back, I'd had enough at that point. It was like, let's put it in proportion here. This guy did sell you very overpriced electronics equipment. That's what he did, Did it well, did it great, was fantastic at it, but that's what he did.
Yeah, the trouble is with that, Ewan, is that people are not going to turn around and say, oh yeah, he did, didn't he? They're not going to say that.
Did he?
Exactly.
I thought he was just a good guy. Damn.
Thought he was doing me a favour.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chat room's making a point. Good job I didn't actually do the Mac show then. I did post it on the Mac stream, unfortunately, though. That may have been my mistake. We wouldn't be able to sit here and shoot the breeze about all the things that go on in technology and bore you for an hour at a time without the help of UK2.net. You please must support them. They're a fantastic bunch. They're up for an award for best hosting provider in the UK. And I don't think we can vote on it. If we would, though, I'd definitely be voting, and I'd hope you guys would too. Please support them in supporting us, which means you've got to go to our site, bageltechnews.com, scroll down until you find their logo, and then click through and buy loads of service from them. They'll know we sent you, but they're not too bad about it, because they'll give you an offer code, BagelTech, that gets you 15% off everything. If you transfer a domain in, don't forget to use an offer code BagelDNS as well, and that'll take away the DNS management charge. You must use both. Please don't forget to do both. And also, there's a competition, so if you go to our site again, underneath the Bain logo, you'll see a win a Nintendo 3DS, and for another week or so, you can win the Nintendo 3DS. The competition is closing down on October 27th. So if you haven't entered yet, please make sure you get your entry in. And if you have, enter again. Use a different email address, and see how many you can win. And also, we'd just be lost without them. Please support them. Since we've been doing video, we've really taken the mickey on the bandwidth. we'd be in trouble if we were still on a VPS. So fortunately, we've got a dedicated one that they gave us.
They haven't minded either.
They haven't said a word. The only thing they keep doing is sending me emails saying, people aren't using the offer code. Is there something wrong? Are you not saying it? What? And the one thing that really worries me is it's people that come on the shows. Andrew Stevens, Dr. Happy Mac, never forgets, never bloody uses the damn thing. Please support them. They're wonderful. Have we got a cool thingy? Ian, have you got a cool thingy for us?
Yes. Twitter client for Mac called, now if I get this right, Yoro Fukuro. Didn't swear. That's Nightingale in Japanese. It's in the App Store. It was recommended on MacBreak Weekly a couple of weeks ago.
Would you mind spelling it?
Y-O-R-U. F-U-K, you are O-U.
No, I'm not.
Which is Nightingale in Japanese.
That does sound like
it's a very, very good client. It's a very, very good at Twitter client.
Just the spelling sounds like a question.
Yeah. Close to the mark.
But it's Nightingale in Japanese, honestly. Or Nighthawk. Something like that.
Nighthawk calling, who was it?
Danny Boy.
Danny Boy, there we go. Nighthawk calling Danny
Boy.
No,
that was...
Nice,
hello, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'll lob it in the chat room so you can.
Please put a link in. Thank you very much. Price?
Yeah. Freebie.
It's free.
No pounds and no pence.
Jolly good. We like that. It's very, excellent. Very good.
Really neat little Twitter plan.
Barry, have you got anything for us?
You're just going to blow your socks off.
Oh! You I like a build up.
You got a mouse on your desk? You got a scanner? On your desk somewhere, what would be the ideal combination there? The mouse scanner. And that's what LG have knocked out this week. It's on the PC Pro site right now. The LG mouse scanner, the thing we've been waiting for. Yeah, evolution of time.
Yeah, I reported on this on the Daily Show, and it looks like a great concept, providing it actually tracks. So you've obviously got one.
Yeah,
and
well, I haven't personally, but I've used it as a John Bray has. He's been unstoppable all week talking about this thing.
So he won't let you near it either. That's a good sign.
No, it's plugged in. But, I mean, I've had a quick go on it, and it's, it's a mouse of a scanner. I've no idea why you need a mouse of a scanner. But it does
as
work.
As you keep it straight.
It's perfectly fine.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I was... I was looking at my own cool thingy, that doesn't sound right. is this the LG... scanner mouse?
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that in person. It's the coolest thing ever. What? I saw it at CES. It's actually magic. It's a magic technology. Because Sarah, you just said, how's it work? I don't know, but it does. I saw them scan a map. They waved the mouse over a map on the desk, and it somehow matched up all the lines and everything of a map perfectly. It's amazing.
Wow.
The document. They paint in the document, and the document shows up on the desktop. I don't know if it's actually. I suspect it's kind of a gimmick, or like I don't think it would be superior to like a real document scanner. But just the technology made for an eye popping demo.
It does work. I mean, we've seen it scanning pages of the magazine, and like you say, it sort of stitches them all together, and it's fine. The one thing oddly it's useless for. Which it would be quite useful for is scanning business cards, because when you try and scan a business card under the mouse, it moves it around and you sort of lose it and it starts blurring.
Why can't you put the business card on your hand and then rub the mouse
you can,
over?
But then you've got to hold it and it all gets a bit, yeah.
Oh, you big girl's blouse. Good grief, Collins.
If
I couldn't hold it.
A mouse scanner, I want it to scan my business card.
Is it a really heavy business card? You big girl's blouse. Yeah,
sounds like the kind of thing that would be good at conferences and things like that for scanning people's business cards.
Now, the way I understand it works is effectively it basically tracks itself with a laser, and it knows where it is on the documents once you start moving, and it just basically looks at what's there and fills it in, almost like you made a Photoshop document and put one layer under another and then rub the top layer out, the other one would come through. You know the one with your iPhones where you move your iPhone around like that and it takes a picture. It's that kind of technology. So,
I thought I had a stuff. YouTube video I was trying to find, but apparently that must have been like one of those Twitter videos. But it's somewhere. I have a video somewhere of this thing, but it's cool.
I think it's going to be one of those things that when I saw it, I thought this is either going to suck or it's going to be phenomenal. And also, when people buy it, they'll either use it to death or it'll be a doorstop within a week.
Yeah. I can't see why I'd use it day to day, I have to say.
Okay. But it was cool, eh, Eric?
What do you get for the person who has everything? You get them a mouse that scans.
Now, there you go. I should have told the wife that.
Get one that makes the tea as well.
Sarah, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do. I was gonna, the one I had planned was really wacky, but after today's news, I thought I had to change it. And I decided that I'm going to make it the C programming language. But I apologize for it being really geeky, but it's what got me started in C all those years ago. And it is still, I still refer to it. This is my original first edition one that I bought in the early 1980s. And I still occasionally look at it from time to time when I can't remember something. It's a superb book.
You've got a lot of books that really are sad, mate.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's cool.
I thought in light of today's news, it would be, you know, given that it did get me started. I've got a great one on Unix. But unfortunately, it wasn't by Dennis Ritchie, but it's still a very good book. But when it comes to C, that was what got me started with it years ago.
You've impressed the chat room, mate.
Oh, okay.
A C Bible, really?
It's commonly referred to as K&R.
Right. What's that mean?
You say K&R, it's because it's Kernighan and Ritchie who wrote the book.
Right, got you. Sorry.
And it's only a thin volume as well. It's only about 250 pages. But it, you know, it is the basic original C before C++ came along. Even before the second edition was brought out, which was anti-standard C. But it describes all the important context aspects of it, including pointers, which is a real pig to get a handle on when you're writing C code for the first time.
Very good. Now, I was a bit thrown there because Eric Lanigan did say that he's got a cool thingy, which has thrown me completely. So... though I thought I'd never say these words again. Eric, do you have a cool thingy?
Yes, I do. I do, and it's a real one. It's a real good one too. You may have heard of it. I don't know because I'm late to the Kindle party. I just got my first Kindle like last week.
Yeah, but you did Kindle last week. Don't you dare do Kindle this week.
I almost did. I almost had just another just BS pick, but this one's good. This is a service for your Kindle. If you're like me and you want to be able to offload like really long articles or PDF documents or you know kind of thought pieces that you come across on the internet, and you're like, well, I'll save that for later and I'll read it on the device more comfortable for my eyes to read. There is a really amazing way to send it to your Kindle. Used to be called Kindleability. It's now called Tinderizer. Tinderizer. Tinderizer.com. You put a bookmarklet up in your browser bookmarks bar, and then any website, any article that you're reading, it piggybacks on the readability engine. So you click that Tinderizer button, and it goes sent to your Kindle. And you go, and it's a perfect replication of that article. You know, fully. Kindle formatted, so you can modify the text size and all that good stuff. It's fully Kindle formatted text, sends to your Kindle like almost instantly. It's really fantastic. I've offloaded lots of really long articles to it.
So forgive my ignorance. How does it know which your Kindle is? Is there like an IMEI number or is it an email address or?
There is every Kindle has a secret email address assigned to it. So I have a secret address at Kindle.com. And so it sends to that. And what I first had to do was I had to go to Amazon.com, sign into my account, go to manage my Kindle, and then you have to add their Tinderizer email address as an acceptable one because it'll reject anything except the ones that you've permitted to the whitelist. So you add Tinderizer to your whitelist. And from then on, it's a simple little JavaScript or Java applet that any page you're on, just like you would Readability or Instapaper or Safari Reader, just boom, and it's on your Kindle.
Excellent. Very, very good.
There's another one called Instapaper, Eric. Give that a try as well.
I have that.
It's very similar, but it's got iPhone apps and smartphone apps as well. So you can...
I'm a huge Instapaper fan. Let me just quickly tell you why that didn't work for me for this. Instapaper has a really cool feature, might work for some people, didn't work for what I needed it to, which is it will send a digest, a daily or hourly digest, as you choose, of your Instapaper unread documents as a single ebook. as a single Kindle formatted ebook. So it doesn't come across with Tenderizer. Every article, you can see my list of articles here. Every article appears in your Kindle library as if it were a book, as if it were a separate publication. That's not right for everybody. That could be annoying if you have a lot of those things or you offload stuff indefinitely. For me, I've got stuff that's like, you know, the next blog post about the Windows 8 start menu from their blog, that's like 10 pages long. I'll send to my Kindle, and with Kindle ability or with Tenderizer, it's there immediately. Whereas with Instapaper, there's no way just to force it. You have to just wait for whenever they do their next refresh cycle to push it to your device.
Right. Carl in the chat room saying, I use Send to Kindle, which is an extension you can put into Chrome as well. Very useful. Very good. But he doesn't think it does PDFs. Bad luck.
Shame. Oh, now good PDFs. Picnic. You can email PDFs. In fact, I downloaded an example. There was a PDF. Anyway, it was a PDF that had highlightable text. You send that. You email that to your address at Kindle.com, and you put in the subject line "convert," and it will convert that PDF into once again the proper Kindle format. So there's a lot you can do with the Kindle.
Very good, very good. My pick is something pretty simple that I got for a specific reason. So basically, it's a crib card system, and you can just make up a whole series of little cards and play them and flash through them one at a time. But actually what it's got in it as well, which is really cool if you're a student, is a feature to play a game with it effectively. You can slide them around and match up the answers to the questions. So you write questions on one side and answers on the other side, and you can slide them together and you can score yourself on it. Or you can play a game. I've hit the wrong button, bugger. Study. And effectively what you can do is have the answer on the question on one side and the answer on the other, and you get it to show the answer, and you can score yourself as correct or incorrect, and it'll add them all together and tell you what your score was at the end of the day, the little test. There you go. So I use it just for crib notes for the show, for the stories at the start. But it's good for a student, and it's I think it was £1. It's called Cranberry, CRAMBERRY, Cranberry.
Oh, that's funny.
Go on.
That reminds me, if anyone out there knows the name of this Mac app, please send it to me, because it's something I read a few years ago, and I didn't need it at the time. It was after I was – it was like right as I was done with college. So it was like, you got to be kidding me. I would have used this my whole life there if I knew it existed. There's a Mac app that is a flashcard app that the cool, innovative thing that it did is it would bother you. It would interrupt just any whatever you were doing, if you wanted it to, and ask you flashcard questions. And so if the point was, when you had something that you really needed to commit to, like long-term memory, like you were really learning important stuff, you know, med school or something, I don't know. Then when it's something really important, not just to pass a test, but to remember it, the point is you need to know that stuff outside of the mental context of studying or the class or the test. And so when flashcards come up just randomly, like you're in the middle of just reading news, and then boom, it's asking you what's such and such, and you have to answer it or dismiss it. It does a really cool thing to your brain, which is that it tells your brain, hey, this is probably important because you're getting hit with this all throughout the day at random, unpredictable times. Whereas when you learn something at a predictable study time and regurgitate it at a predictable test taking time, I've heard that it does not stick to long-term memory as well and as deeply as it does when it's just randomized. So I thought that was a really cool idea.
Do you not remember the name? And if you heard it, you'd know it was which one it was. Would it ring a bell?
I probably wouldn't remember it, but it just whatever has that principle out there is what it was. I don't know the name.
Is the irony of the fact that you've forgotten the name of the application that helps you remember things not lost?
It's not lost.
Okay. There's ones here. I did Mac Flashcard app free. I've got Grey Matters, Higion, Study Helper, iFlash Loopware, Flashcards for Mac, ProVoc. There's a whole bunch there. So don't be a lazy bastard. Go look yourself.
Go do my own flashcards.
If anyone's got the answer, please write to Eric at Eric Lanigan on Twitter, and he'll be very grateful.
Indeed.
Last bit then. Where can we get a hold of you, Ian?
I'm on Twitter as usual, at TIOA. You'll find me there, chuntering about something.
Turn it off and back on again, which, of course, indeed, is the way to solve your BlackBerry problems this week.
Yes, absolutely.
Small gap of a couple of days in between, but never mind.
I don't know why I just switched back to Ian while Sarah was talking. That's my fault, sorry. Barry, PC Pro Magazine, when's it due out this month?
There's one out today, Ewan.
Hey! That's why you came on the show. I thought I was a bit lucky.
Yeah, Windows 8 on the cover today. It's good, good feature, good issue.
And any other big stories?
Well, lots of good features. We got a SLD versus SLR in the labs. We got dual band routers in the labs, which is good for people who struggle to if you've got lots of neighbours around on 2.4 gig Wi-Fi, get yourself onto 5, and you can use things like Skype and not break out every 2 seconds. So,
excellent.
Yeah, lots of good stuff in there. Can I just say congratulations to Ian as well? Can he come around and sort out my kids? Because the way you went from absolute pandemonium to dead silence for an hour is remarkably impressive. I'm going to hire that man.
It is.
Thank you very much. I don't know how that worked, but it's gone quiet again. Well, a bit rattling in the background, but be all right. Mute's a good thing.
Until I threw in a bit of petrol on it, and then that even more impressive, mate. Sarah, where can we get a hold of you, missus?
You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Jolly good, mate. And finally, Eric Lanigan.
That's the usual Eric Lanigan places. Twitter.com and YouTube and everything. .com. ERIKLANIGAN.
And Tech Talkback, most 3 times a week.
Late Night Tech, yes.
Late Night Tech. I keep calling Tech Talkback. I'm sorry, dude.
That's fine. It's the same show. It's the same show.
It, well, it is, but it isn't.
But it's about 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah. And it's 4 a.m. 3 a.m. ish if you're in the UK, and then 4 hours worth of breakfast show if you bothered. We'll be back again next week, same time, same place, 9:30 p.m. with the big show as normal. We've got the Daily Show first thing in the morning, and then we'll have the Mac Show at 3 p.m. and we'll have the Photo Show at 4 p.m. I've got a message out to Mr. Green. I think he might be coming this week, so we should have a bit of fun. Have a great week, and thanks very much for listening.